everybody, and welcome to 90s Court. I'm one of your hosts, Lisa.
I'm one of your hosts, Andy.
And we do this thing called 90s Court. It is a show where if you've never listened before, we're going to give a quick breakdown of what we do. We take two popular things from the 90s, put them together in quote-unquote court, and then we come together and or before that, before the break, we talk about two things that were maybe less popular, but we make them interesting.
We talk about bad stuff in the first half, and then we talk about good stuff in the second half.
Bingo bango. That's
not true. We don't actually do that. Yeah, it's so good to be back, everybody. I'm really, really excited to be here because this is a big episode for me because this is does contain one of my favorite movies of all time. So I'm pretty excited to get to cover that.
No big deal.
Even though
no
I'm not covering the movie that's my favorite.
Oh.
I'll let somebody else do it because I was like, I'll just be too biased and be like gushing over it for no reason. So
that's okay. I think that would be fine. I'm actually excited to hear all the stuff you have for it because it's such a critic. I mean, it's just like probably one of the biggest, if not, well, behind Jurassic Park, one of the biggest movies of the 90s.
Okay. No? Yeah. I mean, as far as like biggest movies, as far as like, size, I thought, because I was like, Jurassic Park is not nearly as good as...
No, it's not. Okay. It's not nearly as good. Not even close.
I was misunderstanding. But
I'm thinking, like, if you were to think about, like, a top 10 movies from the 90s, yeah. Just, like, they're both in there.
Oh,
they're both
for
in
sure.
there, I would say. At least mine. So that's one of the things we do. Andy, how was your week?
Honestly, you know what? It was a pretty interesting week. As a lot of people know, I'm doing my whole starting a business thing. I got a lot of social media stuff going on. You know what? I should plug my social media. How's that sound? So I'm not on Twitter. So to all you Twitter people, sorry. It's just like all the people I know on Twitter are not from anywhere near where I am. So it'd be weird to have it on there. But if you want to hop in and follow my accounts on Facebook and Instagram, I am at Rad Lad Games. It's just like it spells. R-A-D-L-A-D Games. And for people from 90s Court, that probably hits even more of a chord than most people who don't listen to 90s Court. But yeah, so that's the name of the store. It'll be opening up in August. But I've been doing a lot of stuff, just like, you know, getting furniture and stuff like that from different places, getting discounts and deals and slinging the goods. How about you?
I'm so excited for you. Me, I am drinking a mimosa, which should tell you how things went for Father's Day because we're recording on Father's Day. So good. And with like probably too well today, probably just a little too well. I don't know. I forgot to mention last week when I was gone last weekend on my staycation in Austin, I hit a thrift store and I got this super rad vintage Looney Tunes sweatshirt.
Holy shit.
And yeah. And I'm wearing it right now to give me super 90s powers.
I was just going to say if you could hold up to the camera, and I remember we're not on video and we never are. So I don't know why I was going to like be like, oh, let me see. And then I realized there's no way to see.
I'll post a picture.
It's a mystery.
Maybe on the Instagram stories. Maybe I won't. Who cares? No one cares about that stuff. But yeah, I'm alive and well. That's all I have, man. I'm just hanging tough.
I care. You know what? If you care about Lisa's sweaters, at Lisa Marie, she is Lisa Marie.
That's true. Just at me and be like, show me your sweaters.
Show me the sweaters.
Skank. Well, and I'll show you my sweaters. It's okay. Skank is a term of endearment that my friend Kim has bestowed upon me since seventh grade. So we're real cool like that. That's how you know you have good friends. But
sounds about right.
I don't know. That's all I got on me for this week, man.
Well, hey, we also like to give our shout outs to our patrons. This week, we're just going to be shouting out our, one of our rock steadies, our Judge Troy. Always appreciate you hanging out with us for so long, supporting us. You have been an amazing amazing fan. I was going to say sponsor, and that's a weird way of putting it. but I guess in a way you do sponsor this podcast, sponsored by Troy. He's great.
That's true.
So we'll get the rest of the shout-outs for everybody else here in the next couple weeks as well. But this week, just wanted to shout-out Troy because he's neat.
He is neat.
And speaking of neat things, we also do things on this show, and I'm up first to do my thing, so I'm going to do it.
Hell yeah. Let's hear it.
So this one's kind of weird because, like, it's something that occurred to me. And I was like, I wonder what year this came out, and realized there's no way in fucking hell that me searching online for this was ever going to yield, like, any results.
Okay.
And the fact that I did yield any results at all is astonishing to me.
Oh, okay. I'm curious. You have my attention, sir.
That I don't have an exact date on when this actually came out, but... it's enough of a 90s thing. Maybe it was late 80s thing too, but it's enough of a 90s thing for me that it was just such a big part of my childhood, and I geeked out about it so much when I was looking at these, because they still have them and still make them apparently. But they just hit different when I was a kid. So let me pull up my notes real quick. So what I'm talking today is about grow monsters. And you might think, what's a grow monster, Andy? That sounds like just two words that you put together, like something to do with plants and also to do with monsters. Well, you'd be wrong. That's not what it is. Also, some people might also call it expandable water toys. So what I'd like to talk to you are about fucking dinosaurs in eggs.
So just, is it just grow monsters, like GROW? There's nothing special to it? Okay.
Nope. So that's a term that I found for it, because I'd searched a million times for, let me think. I think I searched for like dinosaur, like sponge in egg that put in water, dinosaur egg put in water, whatever. But for those of you guys who do remember, you're like, holy shit, you just tickled this like tiny little part of my brain that exists was these fucking things. That whether they were the ones that I remember the most were the dinosaurs. So what this thing is whether it was a small one, a medium sized one, or a big one, because they'd have all different sizes of them. You take this egg, you would place it in a glass of water or in a standing pool of water, whatever the fuck you want, because we're kids, we rule, we do whatever we want.
This is true.
And you let it sit there for like a day. And in the meantime, the egg hatches and a big fucking dinosaur comes out that grows to be massive. And that's all it did.
Oh, boy. I got something like this for my kids a couple years.
Did you look these up?
I found a Mental Floss article about them.
Yeah, I finally found a Mental Floss article about it. And I was so happy to find anything on this, because everything else was just like, bye. Buy grow monsters now. And I found this expandable water toy, because the one that I found, I finally found an article. It's an expandable water toy, and the only picture that accompanies it is a super ripped pink dude that's like super small, and it says the quote grow a boyfriend expandable water toy shown its original size, which honestly, like, I
wish I could do that.
I wish that it had a little bit of a wang and just like knowing that it would grow or whatever, but instead it's
just my gosh, Andy.
What?
That's hilarious.
Thank you. I was going to say, I was like, don't be, okay.
Don't suddenly get on your high horse when you know.
Yeah, I was like the weirdest high horse. You know you want to see that little sponge wang grow. So
foam phallus. Yeah.
Yeah. So there, like, it was. As a kid, like, this was like, this is one of those things that I don't to this day understand how this was the coolest fucking thing ever, like, when I was a kid. And for some people, like, this might sound really dumb, but I'm almost positive there are some people that nerded out on this shit so much, because especially dinosaurs, because I mean, as a kid, fucking dinosaurs were everything, right? And so, I mean, sometimes it was dinosaurs, sometimes it'd be the guys in the eggs, other times it would just be a really small version of them. Usually if it was a smaller version of them, they got fucking huge. I remember specifically there was one time, I don't know what situation this could have possibly happened in, amongst myself and three brothers, and my mom and my dad all at home, and we had in some toilet in the house.
Oh my.
There was a full-size fucking, like, iguana. Like, it might have been a dinosaur. I think it was probably a dinosaur, but it was not, like, an egg version. It was just one of the small ones that just expanded. And I just remember, like, walking into the bathroom, and there's just this fucking, like, I had to be, like, 2 foot long, like, oh my overfilled. Gosh. Like, it was one that clearly was just, like, at capacity for size, that it just was just, like, sitting there, and it was just pulling out this big, slimy fucking, like, stegosaurus.
That had been grown by pee water.
Well, I don't think we put it in pee, but...
Well, but the toilet bowl definitely ain't, like, the cleanest place.
No, it's not,
but
clean, but we didn't understand. Like, it's just water. And so, so I'm like, let me get this slimy boy. Let me just, like, hold it. And the thing is once you get it done and you've made it grow, like, you don't play with it. Like, you're just like, we did it. We made it. And then now we do what all people do with children and throw it away.
This is, so I got my kids something similar like this, but they come in just like tiny capsules now.
Uh-huh.
And they don't get to be this large, or at least not the ones I bought. But they went so apeshit for them, Andy, that they saved them inside their special secret drawer in
Fuck
their rooms.
Yes.
Yeah, and so like I'm a little like crazy about the stuff that they save, and I'm like, okay, you can save this stupid shit if you want to. And they have their special drawer, and inside are these like half broken pterodactyls and ants made out of this foam.
Yeah. Did you ever think about the fact that your kids are cool and you're the worst?
Yeah, I have the time.
I was just making sure
that they're right.
Like, it might not be the truth, but I was just thinking, like, what if that is the case and that it turns out that you're wrong and your kids are actually really smart?
I'm wrong all the time.
Yeah.
It's like my best pastime.
I said that. It's not like I'm like opening a drawer and it's like, oh, there's my 14 dinosaurs from days gone by that are just literally shitty sponges. But yeah, as far as how they work, it's kind of interesting because, especially for like the dinosaur eggs. So they had on the thing, the Mental Floss article, it's about this super absorbent polymer technology that was invented and used in the 70s and 80s. And originally it was used for like menstrual pads, tampons, and diapers and stuff like that. And it was like super useful. They're like, holy shit, this is rad. Eventually, apparently they did find out, they're like, oh, there is some like toxic issues whenever you put it inside of your people's delicates a lot. So they're like, we should probably use something else. But it did do great for these. So basically there would be an egg that would be made of kind of like a dissolvable-ish material. And so the water would get inside of the egg into the thing that was the expanding thing. And so because it's inside of that and it's super tiny, then as it grows, it breaks out of the egg. So it looks like a dinosaur actually hatching from an egg. And so I need you to understand that this was as good as it fucking got, guys.
No, we peaked at dissolvable dinosaur eggs.
We peaked at the dinosaur egg, like, and it wasn't even like I said, we didn't keep them or use them afterwards. We peaked when it hatched, and after it hatched, I was like, I'm never going to see something better than that, and I never have.
This is true.
And that's it.
You never have. And you never will. It's over.
I never will. So,
If you ever have a child, you look in their face for the first time, you go, man, the dinosaur egg was better.
I'm going to do this for them and watch their eyes light up, and I'll be like, that's the last time.
That's it.
That's the last time
you're
going to have
wonderment
ever again. So anyways, grow monsters.
Grow monsters.
Robots
yum.
In disguise.
That was great, Andy. Thank you for unlocking that memory.
Sure.
That you can get shit like that at like the Five Below or whatever. Mm-hmm. Easy money for an afternoon or at least 45 minutes of anguish.
We don't have Five Below in Illinois.
What the hell do you have? Dollar Tree? Go Dollar Tree. They got that shit there too.
Sure.
Dollar General? Anyway, Dollar stores. You got them. So my thing. Okay. If you recall, if you were going to be gone for a while in the 90s, you would just leave like a little note for your mom or your dad.
Mm-hmm.
You say like where you're gonna be. You'll be down at, I'm gonna be down at Jimmy's house. Be down at Jimmy John's house, eating sandwiches at Jimmy John's house. And I'm gonna be doing that. But what about your friends? Your friends don't live in your house and they can't see
a note
about where you are and what you're doing.
How do they
know? So how would they know? And what would you say to them? So I have something. So I wish I had had my phone picked up at the exact right time to have immediately done that. But my friends, that's why you have. Is it going to play? That's right.
Oh.
AOL Instant Messenger. But
oh,
I'm not covering AOL Instant Messenger as a whole. I'm simply covering the critical AOL away message.
Oh,
one more time.
Yeah.
One more time for the friends. Oh, no. Play it again. Oh, it's so right. Oh my gosh. Like, how many times in your childhood, how many millions of times as a kid did you hear that sound?
Too many.
Okay, so the AOL Instant Messenger away message, that's kind of a mouthful. The Messenger application by AOL launched in 97 and allowed you to connect with your friends like over, well, instant messages, right? But you weren't always just available to chat with your friends, to talk to them. So they gave you the option to just set a little note on your account to show that you were not there, but to also say something cool, you know, something probably really smart about like, but did you ever just say what you were doing? Fuck no.
No.
Like, I never posted like, I'm gone to school, I'll be back at 3:45, smooches. Like, I never said anything like
Jesus
that. Instead,
King.
Andy,
John
3:16.
John 3:16.
And that's all you wrote is your way message because
John 3:16 goodbye.
John 3:16 peace. What would we do instead, Andy? What did you do?
Me? I don't remember.
How do you know?
Lisa, Andy. You gotta understand. Here's the thing, Lisa. And I'm not trying to be like, this is weird. Like, I just talked about like the fucking hatching dinosaur eggs, and your thing seems like it's in a whole fucking different galaxy. Like, after you just like went like so far of technology, my mind is still spinning after the transfer from the early 90s to the late 90s. I'm still this catching up.
That's fair. The AOL away message for me was never a place to actually write, like, be back at 3:45, school till 5:15, nothing like that. Band practice till 6:30. Nope. It was always, always lyrics.
Song lyrics.
Or smiley
yes.
face. Yeah, lyrics or smiley faces. And it wasn't just black and white text. You could do like a colored background and a colored font and whatever font that you wanted yes. to, as big as you wanted to. And you could just make that shit the coolest shit ever. But like, or you could just make like a weird cryptic message about how you were feeling or an inside joke with a few friends.
Yeah.
But let's be honest, I only had like one or two friend period in the 90s. So that's kind of a depressing thought.
I'm thinking about ending things, Andy.
John, in parentheses, John 3:16.
Hashtag blessed. Really confusing messages. Is he okay?
It's like, I think he's going to church. Is he going to confession? Is he Catholic? What's happening? A lot of confusing things to figure out with your away message, Andy. But it was also a way to like, I don't know, Andy. To me, it's just like, this is probably one of the biggest things in the 90s to me was the beginning ramping up of the internet, right? You get it when you're, I don't remember what grade I got like a bit of it in, I don't want to say like fourth or fifth grade, and then lost it for a while because I was a piece of shit. And then I got it back in middle school, I think. It's a long story. But I got it back in middle school. And then shortly thereafter, in 97, AOL launches. And ICQ as well. We'll talk about that some other time. But you just had this messenger platform to just talk to people. And you finally had a means to like express yourself in these ways. So it was like your first, like, you had your journal. But like, this was your outlet for being, like, your test driving the emo game. In your away messages.
It was like dressing up and wearing nice clothes, except you're like, oh, I don't have to worry about being too fat or too poor to wear good clothes.
Yes. Sure. I'll go with that. I like that.
Because it's like your flavor or whatever. And it's like, it literally is like you're flavoring yourself and being like, this is me. This is my style or whatever. Me who went to school and was just like, I wore this shirt because it fit me.
It was clean and it was hanging up. It was in the clean pile in the corner.
I have a side part. But, I'm the worst.
Oh, I thought you had. Well, I have a side part,
bowl cuts,
Andy.
Sometimes. Well, my side part was really, really bad.
Well, I almost put my mimosa on my phone charger. That's not going to go well for anybody. But it was just the coolest thing because you could start your, like I said, test drive your emo status and you could kind of start the like mysterious game. And also, it was really great to like have your crushes. Yeah, it was the test run for social media as well, right? Because like this is your means of like projecting a certain something that may not exactly be true. I guess that's kind of I don't know. I'm really reading into this, but more importantly, whenever I experienced this in 97, I was like middle school, so you definitely had crushes, and your crushes would have away messages, and you would just you would just eat up their away messages and try to like read into it.
I had an alarm on when certain people would get on because I would just like, it would just be sitting there. Like sometimes I would get home from school and just be sitting there and like literally my heart would just like soar the second that they got on there.
Andy, yeah, I understand that feel. Mm-hmm. It's too real, especially because in middle school, you're getting to that like, I want to date people and I have crushes stage and... Oh, but yeah, this should have just been about AOL, not just the away message, but the whole platform was just incredible because you could have the alarms for that. You have the like bloop, bloop, all day long. Go to a friend's house. They're chatting with their friend. My friend Kim and I had a friend in Australia, and I'm pretty sure we would chat with him on AOL. And it was that all, every time we'd have a sleepover, just that until like 1 or 2 in the morning, like doo-doo, doo-doo, doo-doo. But away messages were the best. I don't know. I just like...
I get like time gets hazy around this time frame. Because, like, I feel like a lot more of that I felt like was in high school with me, but I also, I don't know. I don't know if it was because of, like, because of the fact that I had older brothers that were using it a lot more back when I was that age or what, but I felt like I was probably playing Counter-Strike more at that time. But I feel like that was also, that was, like, 99, so that was, like, I don't think that would have been then, so.
Yeah, so, yeah, high school for us started 99, 2000, right?
Yeah.
So we were, like, right on the edge. Like, I remember using ICQ predominantly in high school. I remember AOL being a big thing as well. I probably only had my T's in it for, like, a year or two before high school. But it was just the best. But also, you could leave, you know, even if someone was, quote-unquote, away, you could still leave them a message after that. I don't know. It was just, like, it was like your pager status without having a pager, but not really a pager. I don't know how to explain it. It was like, just amazing.
It was, like, the first time that we were, like, we're going to get to test run the amount of anxiety that comes with the internet existing and its problematic.
And we should try it on little kids.
Let's try it on kids.
Little kids.
See what Facebook's going to be like whenever everybody's life has gone to shit.
We've been on the front lines of all these platforms, Andy.
Yeah.
We were in college when Facebook launched.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, because I always, for the longest time, thought, like, these older generations and stuff like that, like, man, they were here when this wasn't there, and then when this wasn't there, I'm like, when you think about now, like, how big of a deal the internet is, like, it's a big deal to have existed when the internet didn't exist.
And it is a big deal.
Be there when it started to exist, and then, yeah, it's just so many different things have happened.
But we can't tell our kids this, because they're going to be like, you're old as balls, and be like, you're right, I am.
Yeah.
And that's why I am right about everything.
Yeah, I'm going to be owning a store where there are going to be kids in there a lot, and I'm going to learn just how uncool I am.
You're going to learn.
I've been sheltered for so long from knowing how uncool I am, so I'm looking forward to learning that very soon.
But that's my thing. The AOL away message, nice. I would love to see. I wish I could just post them up all over the place again. AOL away message, that's my thing. So, a little bit on the shorter side, trying to, at least because we have two very big movies coming up after the break. So let's chill. I have a new Anchor ad.
Oh, really?
I made one. I don't know why.
That's so, that is ad. So, that is so go-getter. That is so not 90s court vibe. I cannot believe that you actually did a thing you didn't have to do.
I did it on purpose.
Holy shit.
But now I just have to remember to actually upload the new Anchor
Man,
ad.
I hope it's not. I hope you don't, and that everybody hears the old one immediately after this.
They're like, Lisa, you go, that wasn't a flipping breeze at all. You dumb Lisa. Anyway, we're going to take a break. We'll be back with poll results from last week and one of our biggest court cases to date. So stay tuned.
I love you.
Bye. Hey, 90s Court listeners. Lisa here. I'm here to talk to you really quickly about a product that I absolutely love and I've used every single day for years and years and years. Let me hit you with a couple of scenarios. Perhaps you're miserable because your partner snores like crazy. Or maybe you're a night shift worker who can't get proper sleep during the day. Or maybe you live in a really loud and busy downtown area. There's hope for you, and it comes in the form of sleep phones from Acoustic Sheep. I'm not lying when I say I've been using them religiously for years, and they're the sole reason I'm not a crazy person suffering from insomnia. Sleep phones are just ultra-soft headphones and a headband that are extremely bed-friendly. Side sleepers can also rejoice, for you can comfortably block out the sounds of the world while getting some soothing, noise-free sleep without hurting your ears. They even have wireless Bluetooth options, so you don't get tangled up in cords overnight. I personally connect mine to my phone each night and listen to some white noise to drown out my partner's snores. I'm telling you, I've gifted them to night shift nurses, in-laws, basically anybody with ears that values a good night's sleep. They even have options now that come preloaded with binaural beats or deeply relaxing ASMR content. So you can find something that's just right for you and maybe not even have to connect to your phone at all if you don't want to. Andy and I both use these now, and we'd love to help you get some rest too. Go to sleepphones.com and use the code 90scourt to get $10 off your order of $39 or more. That's sleepphones.com, and the code is 90scourt. Sweet dreams.
Welcome back, everybody, to part two of 90s Court, the thrilling conclusion of what was quite a cliffhanger during part one. Lisa, you got anything new for us?
I guess I could have told you that I did.
Our Eye from the Sky, Lisa Monahan. What do you got?
I see a large crowd growing outside of Lisa's apartment. I live in a house. Lisa's house because she doesn't like David Bowie. That's terrible. I said I didn't like David Bowie. That was not so good for me.
That's what we were talking about in our break. Anyways, Lisa, go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I failed to mention at the top of the show that last week I participated in With My Next Picks.
Yeah.
With My Next Pick, not Picks. It was a great time. I am in last place, which is surprising, but also I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
Did you see the Twitter poll?
No, I didn't. Am I in first?
You were fucking crushing on the Twitter poll, so we'll see.
Oh, I didn't see that. Well, on Facebook, I was in last place. I forgot they did a Twitter poll.
That's because all the people on Facebook are 12, so you this have to go true. To the people that are on Twitter that are actual real human beings.
Oh, shit. So, I'm winning on Twitter. Never mind. I take it back.
So you're probably not winning overall, but you're probably like at least in like third. So.
I'm feeling pretty good. Feeling pretty good. But yeah, listen to that. We covered 90s. Albums. It was awesome. I had such guys, thank you so much for having me on the show. I had a really good time. The aftermath was crazy in the comment section, but it was still really fun to be on the show. So
it's just like, you were on the show. Guess what? People are going to destroy you for the next month for your takes on things.
This is true. That's absolutely true. And what was I going to say? The With My Next Pick guys challenge us to a trivia show, which I think we're going to accept in the near future. We just have to work out some deets, perhaps. But anyway, stay tuned for that. That should be fun. In the meantime, we have poll results for last week, which are very important.
Yeah, we do. Hey, it's me, Andy. I'm the one with the poll results. So last week we covered Darkwing Duck versus Chippendale Rescue Rangers. And honestly, it was one of those things where it's like, whoever wins, no one loses. Because everybody loves both of these shows. I don't think anybody was particularly like, fuck that other show. It was just all just like, huh, I like this one
more. I was like, fuck the other show, and it was my show. So that's okay.
Right. I forgot you did dislike the sound of your own show. That's true.
I did, yeah.
Facebook came out 50-50, which is a rare thing for Facebook. Usually they're pretty tilted one way or the other, so that was a close one.
Yeah.
I burped off camera. Anyways, nice. Twitter came in a little bit more favorable to old Darkwing. 57.9% to 42.1%, the DD. And Instagram, pretty much the exact same thing as Twitter, 58% to 42%, also the DD. So old Darkwing comes out with the victory against the Rescue Rangers. And I think maybe it was the contingent of people who were like, don't like the voices.
That's fair. Also, what was this saying? Suck like, my gas?
Suck gas, evildoer.
Suck my gas.
Suck gas, evildoer. Suck my gas.
Suck my gas. Suck my gas,
you fuckface. That'd be great if he's like, it was like a pun, but then he also just said the word fuckface on the show. Like, whoa. Beautiful.
I would have really loved that show.
Super ahead of their time. It was weird. Everything else was so G-rated, but then he just called people fuckfaces. Anyway, something just came across my desk. Ba-dum-bum.
You up?
We did it.
We did it.
I mean, it's just like, and here's the thing. When it comes to these films, there are just a set number of films in the 90s that, like, interchangeable could have, like, any of them against each other and none of them would really feel wrong or right. So we just picked two fucking dope-ass movies and we're like, these ones. I don't know. I feel like it was a good pairing. I feel good about the vibe that both of these give and the lasting cultural impact that both of them have had far as that goes. So I'm very excited to hear Lisa talk about a show that I would always tell you for the longest time was my favorite movie ever. But in retrospect, like, I think I just said that because I don't really know what my favorite movie ever is. And so I just said it because I'm like, that's a good movie, I guess. So.
But in hindsight, watching it this week, like I paid to watch it and I was like, it was worth it. I'd pay for it again. I'd pay for it several times over. Sure. Forrest Gump is just such a fucking good movie, it is a Andy. Dope film. So good. Mm-hmm. And for anyone to think otherwise, you're just wrong. You're just wrong. Like sometimes I'm like, no, you're entitled to your opinion. No, not this time. You're just wrong. Okay. Forrest Gump, go for it, kid. Do the whole soundtrack, the whole background. I don't give a fuck. It sounds awesome. Released on July 6, 1994 in the US with a budget of $55 million and a box office of $683 million.
What the fuck? Are you serious?
Yes. Budget of $55 million, box office intake of $683 million. Yowza. Insane. So it was directed by Robert Zemeckis, who loved working with Tom Hanks so much that he went on to do Castaway with him. I believe he also did Polar Express. He just loved him so much. I was just like, yeah, if you have a good thing going, go for it. Tom Hanks seems like the world's most likable person.
He just seems like everybody's uncle, and it's so great.
Well, my husband Jack and I were talking. Like the cool uncle. Yes. Not like your dad, your uncle. And I remember when COVID hit, he got it. And I think everyone was like, stop the fucking car. Yeah. If he gets COVID and dies,
it's like, if something happens to Tom Hanks, we can't, we must protect Tom Hanks. Like that was the immediate thing.
So let's do a quick brief rundown of the cast. Okay, Forrest Gump is played by Tom Hanks, of course. Jenny is played by Robin Wright. You may know her from such films as Everything. Forrest's mother is played by Sally Fields. Special place in my heart. Lieutenant Dan, played by Gary Sinise. I hope I said that right. Mm-hmm. And then Bubba was played by McKelty Williamson. And there are a few other people here and there, but those are probably the biggest key players here.
Can I tell you something? I think whenever we were discussing that, and I was looking through there, but whenever we were picking the movies, I've seen Forrest Gump a billion times, and I know Robin Wright, who plays Jenny's character. Mm-hmm. And then I also know the current Robin Wright, who's been in like a bunch of shit like over the past several years. And I did not associate those two as the same person until literally when I saw her picture next to her name. And I was like, holy shit.
I would say the same thing. Jenny, young Robin Wright versus this one. It's not that they look vastly different. It's just that it's just a bit of a disconnect. That's all. Mm-hmm. So she's been in the game a minute.
House of Cards and like the Wonder Woman, just like a bunch of stuff lately. Yeah. Anyways.
So this is arguably one of the biggest films of the 90s. And to this day, still, it kicks my ass every time I watch it, which is to say I cry. Mm-hmm. Like, just if you cry every time. I cry every single time I watch this movie. And I'm not embarrassed to admit that. And in fact, I went back to the sad scene at the end a couple times to kind of make notes. And I cried an additional time every time I made it to the sad scene. So my eyes have been a little swollen all weekend as a result. But it's iconic for so many amazing cinematic reasons, but also kind of like, it's like the king of quotable lines, which all drop as they come about here and there. So we open on a feather floating through the air, and it lands on Forrest's shoe as he's sitting at a bus stop offering people chocolates and beginning to tell his life story. I'm going to summarize because it's a very long movie and there's a lot that happens. So he starts at how he wasn't a smart young boy and he had a low IQ. And I wanted to point this out because this was a really funny scene that I never caught as a child. Forrest is told he has an IQ of 75, and the man for over the public school the administrator there says the minimum for public school is 80. So in the craziest, boldest move ever, his mama, Sally Fields, has sex with this superintendent person from the school board. And in a crazy flex, when the man is done and is leaving the house, you know, Forrest is sitting on the porch and the man turns around and says to Forrest, he goes, "Well, why don't you say much?" And Forrest just starts making the same like weird sounds. Andy, I never caught that. I never caught it until this watch. And I was like, what?
Amazing.
What is happening? I never caught it. Thank you for making the sound so I didn't have
You're welcome.
God bless you, Andy. So he also had to get leg braces, which made him an even larger target to be picked on. So he was, you know, not a very smart guy. These leg braces, kind of a catch-all for just getting shit on. Mm-hmm. But even in school, where he had no friends and an epic scene where nobody would let him sit with him, you know, this seat's taken, on the bus, he landed a seat next to Jenny. So, sadly, Jenny is one of those girls and women whose entire life is plagued by bad relationships with men and poor decision-making, which always comes to bite her in the ass. Like this may be one of the most tragic female characters in cinema. Yeah. Like, really looking back, I was just like, she just got shit on from start to finish, this poor girl. So, one day when some bullies start after Forrest, like, they're, like, chucking rocks at him, and Jenny is like telling him to, she just goes, "Run, Forrest, run." Everyone knows this one, right? Which is like the biggest quote ever. And this is where we start to see Forrest succeed in little ways, right? So as he's taking off from these bullies, his leg braces start shedding off, right?
The slow motion breaking of the leg braces is so fucking epic.
It's beautiful. It's really beautiful. And so he, you know, he's running and things like this. And then later on, you see him as an older child. No, Yes, this happened when he was younger. Then when he's older in high school, the bullies come after again and he takes off running. But then he's like running super hard and super far that he runs across a football field and he gets noticed and gets picked up and gets a scholarship to go to college for the football team. And where am I in my notes?
Roll
I
tide.
Was looking. Roll Tide. Thank you. So this is the beginning of a series of crazy historical events in which Forrest has like a critical role in this weird, crazy way. So he's seen where the first African-American student is attending an all-white school. He meets John F. Kennedy, and there are a few more like that here and there, but I'll talk about some of the other ones here in a little bit. But this is what's cool. I didn't make a note about this in my notes, but I wanted to say it now. The cinematography that they did here, where they took existing footage and dubbed over a voice as closely as they could and made it look as if Tom Hanks or Forrest Gump was in the room with JFK. And I mean, for the most part, it holds up. It looks really good. And it was awesome to see it in theaters, awesome to watch it as a kid, to be like, this is crazy to see. But shortly thereafter, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, the Lyndon B. Johnson scene where he's like, what do you do? He's like, I have to pee. He's
like,
I believe this man has to pee. And he just does
that,
the voice dubbing on that one.
Was that JFK, though? I thought JFK.
No, that was Lyndon Johnson for that one.
Was it? Okay. So Forrest enlists in the army and heads to Vietnam, where he meets Bubba, who's a young man whose sole focus is about starting a shrimping company when he gets out. And just kind of summarize this whole long sequence, he and Forrest decided to open that shrimping company when they get out of the army. They're going to go on halvesies on everything. And they meet also, they meet Lieutenant Dan while they're deployed, who has a family history of men dying on the field. Right? So he's like, this is his thing. So... What?
I don't know why I always love the cutscene. He fought and died at every single American. What if just like of his ancestors all dying on the battlefield?
It is really funny. Gary Sinise did an incredible job as Lieutenant Dan. Just incredible. Their infantry got ambushed, leading to trail of fatalities where Forrest Gump is going out to try to go find Bubba to try to rescue him. And so in his attempt to go find him, he's finding all these other wounded soldiers. So he's bringing them back and rescuing them. And then he finds Lieutenant Dan. Lieutenant Dan's got his legs blown off, essentially. And it's a whole situation. I'll get back to that in a second. But he finds Bubba. And unfortunately, Bubba dies in his arms, which is really tragic for him. He says his last words were, I want to go home. It's the saddest thing. Mm-hmm. But Lieutenant Dan, who lost his legs in this attack, is upset because he was supposed to die serving just as his ancestors had. So for helping rescue Lieutenant Dan and others in his search for Bubba, he receives the Medal of Honor from LBJ. And then later at the Capitol... So this is where the sequence of like all these crazy historical events where he's randomly partaking in happened. He's at the march on the Pentagon, and he gets to speak at the podium, which leads to him hearing Jenny screaming out from him from the audience. And it turns out she's a hippie now, and she's doing this whole other thing. And he sees the guy that she's with, and he's abusing her, and so he beats the shit out of him at a Black Panther rally.
Oh yeah, that's right.
That's such a crazy sequence, but he loves her so much and lets her, you know, sends her off to California with this asshole, and they say goodbye again. I failed to mention earlier when she was in college and he, you know, say goodbye to her there and whatnot. But he then becomes a crazy ping pong player and competes against China in a ping pong in ping pong diplomacy.
So random.
So random.
Of all the storylines, that one's the weirdest one.
Apparently this was a thing, though. I didn't know that ping pong diplomacy was a thing. I don't know. I'm going to go ahead and admit it. All you 90s court fans, spoiler alert, history is not my thing. Put that out there. So he ends up on the Dick Cavett Show, where he sits next to John Lennon and is, you know, describing about how things are in Vietnam and everything. And he inspires the song Imagine.
It's easy if you try.
Yeah. It's good. Then on New Year's Eve, Lieutenant Dan finds him after that show in New York City, and he lets him know that he ruined his legacy of needing to die on the battlefield with like his ancestors did. So they have this crazy night with these two prostitutes and whatnot, and Lieutenant Dan's just totally brokenhearted about this. And Forrest tells him about his plans to do this shrimping business in honor of Bubba. And he's like, if you ever do that, I'll become your first mate or something like that. Well, he gets, Gump gets discharged and goes back to his home in Greenbow, Alabama. And he, where he finds that he can accept a ping pong endorsement for some paddles and takes this incredible amount of earnings and starts that shrimping business in Mobile. And Lieutenant Dan comes to join his crew as he said he would. And they just become like two shrimping dudes. I want to be a shrimping dude. I want to be a shrimping dude. So he later.
Lisa, go be a shrimping dude.
I want to be a shrimping dude. I think that's my new legacy, is to be a shrimping dude. So he later, Lieutenant Dan also later invests some of their money in quote unquote some sort of fruit company, which was Apple. And they are minted, which is insane. And he ends up, Forrest ends up giving half of those earnings to Bubba's family, which is like the most beautiful scene. The mom like faints and whatnot. It's the best. So sadly, Forrest's mom falls ill and passes. I believe it was from cancer.
Sally Field. Yeah.
Yeah. Leaving Forrest to feel kind of aimless at the moment. But soon thereafter, Jenny returns to him. And this whole time she's been dealing with, you know, this crazy drug addiction and a really wild lifestyle for a few years. And so she stays with him. And in this really sad moment on the stormy night, you know, they were watching some, maybe in the 4th of July or something. I'm not sure. They were watching fireworks on TV. And he asks her to marry him. And in the saddest way possible, he says, I'm not a smart man, but I know what love is.
Yeah.
And he's like, why don't you love me? Oh, it's just the saddest sequence. Oh,
it was.
And it's yeah. This is not a very like funny episode of 90s core, but we'll
it's
get to
not,
it.
But that's okay.
But Forrest Gump is such a good movie. And who cares if it's not funny?
Because
we're still here. So she doesn't say anything, but they bang that night, which is awesome. And then she runs, runs away the next morning.
Nice.
And he wakes up. He doesn't know what to do with himself. He's totally heartbroken. He's sitting on the porch and he just gets up and is like, he just takes off running. Mm-hmm. And then he just keeps running through the city and then through the county and then through the state. And then he ends up going from coast to coast and back again and ends up running, you know, 3 full years. And in that time frame, he inspires the like shit happens slogan, the yellow smiley face thing. He ends up having a whole trail of people running behind him as well. One day he just decides he's done. And in that time frame, Jenny sees him on TV as this like crazy runner guy and writes to him and connects with him again. So we're at the basically at the end of the movie. I don't know how I've condensed it this much, but I did. We cut back to Forrest, who's at the bus stop again, finishing telling his story to this older woman. And he tells her that he's here to take the bus to go see Jenny, who wrote him. And the woman is like, well, you don't need to take the bus. You're only 5 blocks away from where you need to go. So he gets up, takes off running, goes to Jenny's apartment. She's showing him a scrapbook. And then a woman comes in and brings Jenny's son. And Forrest is like, oh, Jenny, you have a son, you know, or whatever. And she goes, his name is Forrest. And he's named after his dad. And there's a sequence. Oh, I'm almost going to get choked up talking about it. There's a sequence where he steps back and he's like, he's totally blown away. But in the sweetest thing of nothing else, he's just like, is he smart or is he? And he like pats his chest, you know, basically like, is he dumb like me? It breaks my heart every time. It breaks my heart. Tom Hanks is such an incredible actor. Oh, my gosh. And yeah, it's his son. And she's like, no, he's just very smart. And so they take him to a park and whatnot. And Jenny alerts Forrest that she's sick with some sort of virus. And she asks Forrest to marry her. You know, after basically having turned down his marriage proposal, now that she got all the craziness out of her system and she just needs someone secure, I suppose. And she loves Forrest. They go back to Greenbow and they get married. And Lieutenant Dan comes to the wedding with his fiance. And shortly thereafter, Jenny and Forrest are in the room and he's bringing her breakfast. He starts talking about how she wished that she was there with him all these years, that he was doing crazy things like being in Vietnam, doing the running thing, just any of the crazy, like the ping, anything that he was doing. And she just said, I wish I were there. And he says, you were. And then it cuts to him saying, you know, you died on a Saturday morning. Andy, I'm going to cry.
Yeah.
Ugh. And it's just this. And he starts this monologue of talking about, you know, how he's taking care of their son, Forrest.
It's weird to me, too, the way that, like, in this movie, they use the absence of music almost has as much of an emotional pull as when they have the music, because they, like, sometimes, like, you know, scenes when it's, like, to really accentuate it, there's just complete silence, like, in the background, and it just really,
It really hurts. I'm telling you, every single time I went through this sequence, all weekend long, I've cried, and I've cried hard every time. And it's just, and so he, you know, for little Forrest wrote him a note, and he left it there. He said, you can't read it. He left it for Jenny, and he cries and, you know, says, if you need anything, I'm not, you know, I'll be right here, or something like that. And then at the end of the movie, he sends little Forrest off to the same school bus at the same, you know, stop he used to take and whatnot. And then the feather falls out of a book that he, you know, that little Forrest had in his backpack, and then it floats away. And that's the end of the movie. And it's just, it's 2.5 hours. I've condensed it so hard, but it's such a, if you haven't seen it, who are you?
Yeah.
If you haven't seen Forrest Gump, and if you have seen it and it's been a long time, just go back and watch it, because it really stands up. It's such a great film.
It's one of those things that's on TV all the time, and you might catch some of it, but just like actually sitting down and watching the entire thing again is just, and here's the thing. I might do that again, because I didn't watch this again. I have seen this movie so many freaking times. That's why I remember like every line. I mean, the quotable lines, like when you, like right off the bat at the beginning, like you say, like, you can't sit here. Like, I literally said that today. Like, that is like a line that like people say all the time. Like, you can't sit here, or like, you can sit here if you want.
Well, just so much stuff. Stupid is as stupid does. That's a good one.
And by the way, you were, I meant to say it earlier, but like, you were right. That was JFK who with the peeing thing, and Lyndon B. Johnson was the one who saw him when he pulled his pants down.
Right.
He got bit in the butt.
So, anyways. There was a lot of trivia. I didn't really want to go over any of it, except for there was one piece that was fascinating to me that I did look up that I wanted to talk about. So Lieutenant Dan, played by Gary Sinise, he gets his legs blown off in Vietnam. And after about halfway through the movie, he doesn't have his legs anymore. And I was like, how was he just, did he just have his legs bent back the whole time? No, I actually wanted to know how they did that. They apparently just put like a blue fabric around his legs. Okay. And just did all that editing and CG in post and whatnot. So there was a lot of CG in this film.
Say, that was a big budget, like $50 million or whatever. Like, I was surprised how much they spent, but I mean, they made it back clearly.
And then some. And the one thing, what was the one thing that was interesting? Tom Hanks was not paid for this film. Instead, he took percentage points, which ultimately netted him in the region of $40 million.
No jokes. That's like, I mean, because I remember it was kind of like whoever it was, Jack Nicholson, like, played the Joker or whatever, and I think, at least I heard this forever ago, that he took some percentage of, like, the merchandise or something like that as part of it, or like that. So, but again, that's also something I heard a million years ago. I have no idea if it's true, but that is so clutch.
So that's Forrest Gump. It took to episode 85 to get to this one, but it was worth waiting for. I want to hand it over now to Good Will Hunting, because it also deserves. Please don't rush. Take all the time you want for Good Will Hunting.
Man,
please.
I'll tell you what, Lisa. I mean, you covered that movie so well in such a good and succinct way, but still covered every, like, so many important things. That was So
thank you.
Now I feel bad, like being funny about this movie or something, because it
no, please do. Well, there's not a lot funny about Forrest Gump. I will say this. Okay, I also want to add this before you start Good Will Hunting. I got, how much time is left? I am 26 minutes away from finishing Good Will Hunting. I've never seen it before in my life. I'm going to have this ending spoiled for me right here live on the show. So let's do
this. Breaking news. So Good Will Hunting, 1997 film written by Ben Affleck and Matt Damon. That's right.
Oh, they wrote it.
The Wonder Twins wrote it when they were at Harvard. It starred Robin Williams, Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, Stellan Skarsgård, and Minnie Driver. Stellan Skarsgård, like, is such a good, he's such a good specific type of actor.
Yes,
like,
he is.
He's very good at, like, bad guys or, like, scientists and stuff like that, and he played a very good job in this one. And the Minnie Driver was, of course, the love interest of him. Music by Danny Elfman. Budget of $10 million, so they did it balling on a budget. Box office $225.9 million, so not as big, obviously, but they, you know, still did a pretty good job. Rotten Tomatoes score 98% for critics and 94% for audience, which alarmingly somehow Forrest Gump is way lower, and I'm just like, that, like, listen, I love this movie, but like, I love this movie, but it is no Forrest Gump. But anyway,
right?
So as you all know, this is the movie with the chalkboard. Right. There's the thing is that in this movie, more so than like quotable lines, there's so many different scenes and things like that that have been spoofed or redone in like different things that I've seen. I can tell you this, I don't know that I'd actually seen Good Will Hunting all the way through until this, like, for this episode, which is really crazy to me because, like, I've always known it to be a really good movie, and I saw it, and I'm like, I don't, if I did, it's been a long time. But I was very happy that I sat down and watched the whole thing because it was very, very good. So, like, obviously, there's the thing on the chalkboard because, like, there's spoofs and stuff in reference to that all the time, like, where there's a chalkboard and there's, like, a super complicated math equation. And so Matt Damon, who is a janitor at MIT, like, sneaks up and you know, completes the math equation and hides and doesn't want anyone to know that he did it. So it's clear that Matt Damon, Will Hunting, is a super rough and tumble guy who lives in southeast of Boston. Because that's like every movie that he will ever be involved in ever. He's like, it needs to be in Boston or I quit.
Right.
So, but he apparently lives that hard life with his boys, but he's also wicked smart, which you will find out that's also where the term like wicked smart came from as well, because people do that all the time.
Okay. I was wondering if it originated from this film.
Now,
okay.
I will tell you, if the guys from With My Next Pick are listening, they're going to be like, this is offensive to me in so many ways, because those guys do very much like actually have like these accents at times, and so I hope you guys appreciate my very rough Boston-esque accent that I occasionally
they're massholes, they get it,
massholes. So he saves he solves the insane equation, and so the entire class is like, who the fuck did this, this is amazing. And they're trying to figure out, like, because it's this big deal because it's this huge equation that like nobody had solved or whatever, and so everybody's trying to figure out who did it. And then they cut to, you know, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck are out, you know, in South Boston, like, they're drinking, you know, cutting it up, and like, and they get in fights and stuff because they get in a lot of trouble because they're from the Southie, and they, you know, sometimes they get in a little bit of trouble. They, there's, you know, orphans, they grew up a little bit tougher. And so, Matt Damon ends up getting caught by the cops, because he ended up fighting some guy, and he was the person who was still punching a guy on the ground whenever the cop showed up.
That slow motion fight scene made me laugh so hard.
Yeah, it was, I was like, who's winning this? Like, I don't understand. Like, and it was not, right. The punches clearly were missing, like, every time.
Yes.
So meanwhile, as he's getting, you know, caught by the cops at MIT, the search for the mystery problem, solving problem boy is still on. So they're still trying to figure out who it is because nobody's taking credit for solving that equation on the thing. So Skarsgård, the professor's like, I'm going to put up another equation and see if somebody else solves it. So he's basically like trying to like draw him in or whatever. And of course he buys, you know, bites it. And so Matt Damon is out in the hallway solving the equation or whatever, and Skarsgård, the professor, like chases after him, like, hey, people are actually working on that shit, like, get the fuck out of here. And, like, he runs off because he assumes he's just messing with the chalkboard or something.
Right.
And he comes back and he's like, holy shit, he solved it. And at that point, Matt Damon was also like, I'm quitting this job and leaving, because for whatever reason, he doesn't want credit for it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's almost like he's like, I'm smart, but I'm a cool, hard Boston guy. Like, I don't know. It's this weird dichotomy of personalities where he kind of like, he knows that we'll get into it more later. He is a self-sabotaging human being in a lot of different ways. He doesn't think he deserves a lot of the things that he gets. So he goes to this bar and, let me see. So they end up going to this bar, which is like, I think a Harvard bar or something like that. And so Ben Affleck's talking to this woman and kind of like flirting with her or whatever. And this like this Harvard guy comes up and tries to just like show him up and like is saying all of these really smart and witty things. And then Matt Damon just comes up and fucking owns him, like smart owns him.
So good.
Because he's
such
so good.
A great scene.
It was so good. And then that the woman who was being flirted with or whatever ends up giving her number to Matt Damon. And that, of course, is the character played by Minnie Driver, who would become the main love interest, who is also, I believe, British in this movie. But she is attending Harvard. So let's see. So in the meantime, he goes to court for his assault charges because, you know, he punched some guys earlier. And he's found guilty. But the professor from MIT finds him and it's like, hey, you know, put this guy under my supervision. We need him for math.
Yeah, we need like, you for math.
Like, I don't know what they were using him for. They're just like, we need this guy for math. And so, like, they just brought him in for math. It's like him and, like, a bunch of other math guys. And they're like, they'll like all the math guys will be like, oh, what about this? And then Matt Damon's just like, no, this. And they're like, oh, my God, math. So
that's the best description of the whole math story, because I was just like, what is going on?
If you think about it too long, you'll be like, I honestly don't know like what they're trying to achieve by this. Like, are they solving new equations that haven't been solved yet? I don't know.
Correct. Yeah.
So he has to go to therapy though, because it's kind of like he needs to be rehabilitated, because I mean, in some ways he's like, hey, this guy is a genius or whatever, and we need to, you know, get him into a place where maybe like he can go work for a company and be really smart, which I still don't understand why he like wants to do that for this guy, like out of the blue, but I don't know. So basically he takes him to several therapists, but every time Matt Damon's character, Will Hunting, I don't know why I have to refer to him as Matt Damon, is so smart and everything like that, he like ends up figuring out the weaknesses of the psychiatrist or therapist or whatever, and ends up just like owning them to the point where they're like, fuck this guy, and you know, and they leave. And so eventually he's like, okay, well, I got to get out the big guns. So he finds a good old college friend of his, Robin Williams, who is a teacher, and so he ends up being his therapist. And so they have their first therapy session, and it does end with Robin Williams with his hand around Matt Damon's throat, telling him never to disrespect his wife again. Because Matt Damon tried to do the thing he did with all the other people of like trying to find his weaknesses and pick it apart or whatever. And Robin Williams just wasn't having it. So, and it's kind of a back and forth, because then you also see the different side of Matt Damon, where he's dating this woman that he'd met at the bar, and they are like super hitting it off. They have a great relationship that's going and everything like that. And the next day they go back to therapy with Robin Williams again, but this time he takes him out to a park bench, out by a pond, and Robin Williams ends up telling him like this super long story or whatever, and ends up basically owning the shit out of Matt Damon, because Matt Damon's character like just thinks he's so fucking unbelievably smart, and basically explaining to him that he's like, you know, every time that I start to like feel bad about like all of the things that you said and the things that are 100% right, I forget you don't have any life experience at all, and you don't know anything about XYZ. And I think the line that I love the most was, he's like, at the end, he's like, you're an orphan, right? And he's like, and you don't need an answer. He's like, you think I know the slightest fucking thing about your life because I read Oliver Twist?
That's a good line.
It was such a good line, because it was talking about the fact that, like, he's like, sure, you've read books about all of these things, but don't pretend like just because you've read these books, you know a fucking thing about me. I guess it's kind of one of those things where, like, because of that and his rough exterior and everything like that, they kind of hit it off a little bit better. Although for the next couple sessions, it would be Robin Williams and Matt Damon just sitting and staring at each other, and Matt Damon would just let the clock run out. And finally, Matt Damon one time just started talking, and that's when they started kind of actually making some progress. So Matt Damon's starting to get like really into this girl that he's been dating. And it's this back and forth of him being worried that it might not work out because she might be boring or not smart enough or something. And that's what he's kind of talking with Robin Williams about, is like, it's a very relatable thing, which is like, well, I can already see ahead, and I know how it's not going to, all the reasons that it's not going to work out, right? And so you're like so smart that you self-sabotage yourself, because like, well, why even try, because I've already seen in the future and this is what's going to happen. Right. And so, and Robin Williams is very much the opposite way of being like, listen, like, here's all of these things that I went through, and Matt Damon keeps saying, but look at all the pain you had to go through as a result of that, like with his wife who had passed away. And they use that a lot of the time when they're talking about their his relationship he'd had with his wife, who it was dead. And he keeps saying that, like, no, listen, even though all of these things happen and like my career kind of took a nosedive as a result of it, like I would not have traded a single thing for all of that.
Yeah, that's sweet.
And relationship stuff keeps happening. So the
professor, which, by the way, if I may, Minnie Driver, I've never liked her. She was tremendously likable in this film. Yeah, she was the cutest shit in the universe.
Yeah, it was just a very good pairing with them.
Yes, agreed.
So Professor Guy is pressing Robin Williams to hurry up and make Matt Damon live up to his potential. It seems like for the professor kind of has a different outlook on life than Robin Williams does. Basically just like, we need him to be really good at his professional career and live up to his standards. And Robin Williams is like, he's a human being, right? Like, he's trying to, like, and so it's kind of this, they clearly have a past to him and this professor guy when they went to school together. And so they don't always see eye to eye on everything. Meanwhile, Minnie Driver is asking Matt Damon to move to California with her. And so Matt Damon's like, I have just the plan. I'm going to self-sabotage the shit out of myself. And just basically takes a shotgun, puts it against his foot, and pulls the trigger over and over and over again, because he's like, I know how to make this better. I'm going to ruin and tear down everything. So he basically, all of the progress he'd done with kind of growing and becoming willing to take chances and move forward and everything like that, he just tears it all down around him and kind of closes up again and starts attacking, you know, lashing out at people. He lashes out at her. Mm-hmm. Lashes out at the professor, lashes out at Robin Williams, and basically is just like, fuck all this. I'm going to go, I don't need any of this. I'm going to go be a construction worker.
Yes.
And so, I mean, and that's, you know, and it's, again, it's like, he's like, you know, that's all I want to do. And so he goes and he's going to do it. And as we watch his girlfriend fly off to California without him.
And so, that's where I dropped off the movie. So everything from here is new.
So they're on the scene of the construction site working and everything like that. And Matt Damon and Ben Affleck are talking. And this is just after a collection of scenes where Matt Damon has just not been connecting. Like, nobody's been connecting with him. Mm-hmm. And he's like explaining how, like, you know, Ben Affleck's like, oh, yeah, you got to, he's like, you know, do X, Y, Z. And he's like, no, fuck that. I just want to do this. And Ben Affleck is just like, you've got to be fucking kidding me, man. Like, you're like, you're like the one, you have a chance to go out and do something. And if you're still here in 10 years or whatever, I'll fucking kill you myself. Like, basically, like, in this way of saying, like, you have this chance to make these huge opportunities and everything. And that he's like, all he ever dreams about is, it's weird because they are like such rough and like they goof around and are like, you know, buddy, buddy and dick with each other. Ben Affleck has this really serious conversation with him about how he says the line, we have a few drinks and a few laughs and it's great. But you know what the best part of my day is? For about 10 seconds from when I pull up to the curb and I get to your door, because I think maybe I'll get up there and I'll knock on your door one day and you won't be there. Because just he wants one day, because he's like, he has so much potential and he believes in his friends so much. He just wants one day for him to just go off and do something and not stick around Boston anymore and just like let his life, you know, slip away, which is kind of a weird thought considering he's not 21 yet. But I always like that line. I've heard that line quoted other times in different ways too, is the 10 seconds when he just is hoping like that he's going to show up one day and he'll be gone and doing something better for himself. And so whatever reason, Ben reaches him whenever he says that. And so Matt Damon goes back to Robin Williams and just some other quotable things. This is something that I've seen done in movies and stuff and referenced a million times. It's not your fault. I know. No. It's not your fault. And Matt Damon keeps saying, I know. And Robin Williams keeps saying, it's not your fault. And then there's the thing where finally he breaks down and starts crying. Aww. And they kind of reach each other or whatever. And I guess it's just like, It's interesting because a lot of the stuff is like, you know, if you haven't ever been to therapy or something like that, you'd be like, oh, this is what therapy's like only. But I mean, and a lot of it's not completely wrong. And it was an interesting, like, very realistic problem to have of getting in your own way and everything like that. And almost, you know, hating yourself because you don't think you deserve X, Y, Z.
Right.
And so that's, I think, with the it's not your fault thing and him finally just kind of like breaking down or whatever, because after that, like, he was fine. Like, everything was good after that. So he goes from some job interviews, he takes a job, and then he debriefs with Robin Williams, and Robin Williams is like, good. I'm glad to hear it. Everything's good. So he meets with his buddies for his 21st birthday, and the boys actually bought him a new car, like an old beater for his birthday.
What?
That's weird, I know. He goes for his 21st birthday, and they buy him his old car, and they're like, hey, you need a ride to get to Cambridge and back, because he got a job at Cambridge, I guess. And so they're like, he's like, holy shit, this is amazing, because he didn't have a car. And so is this really a big deal, this really emotional thing? Because, like you said, I mean, Ben Affleck and all of his friends, even though they're, you know, they can be assholes and they're, you know, rough and tumble or whatever, they just want what's best for him because they know if anybody's going to get out of there, it's going to be him. And it seems like Robin Williams is off to live a little bit too, because that was kind of a thing with their back and forth of their relationship too, was that Robin Williams was telling Matt Damon all this stuff, but sometimes Matt Damon was really being like, well, like, you can go out and live too. And he keeps like, oh, my life's already over. Like, you know, my wife's dead and all that stuff. And
yeah.
So it's at the end, it's kind of like, okay, he's going to go travel the world and go, you know, see some new things. And at the end, Ben Affleck gets his wish from that line that I quoted earlier. When he shows up at Matt Damon's house with the guys, they go up to the door and he's not there. And evidently he left a note for Robin Williams letting him know, sorry, he quit the job. He had to see about a girl, and it was him in that car driving to California to go be with Minnie Driver. So, yeah. So that's the end of the movie.
That's a good ending to it. Yeah. Gotta go be with Minnie Driver and her glorious, beautiful jaw.
I know.
She's got that beautiful jawline.
I left so much out of that, but it was a great flick. So, trivia.
Let's hear it.
The lines, of course, there's always Robin Williams ad-libbing stuff. So the lines in the scene where Sean, Robin Williams, talks about his late wife's farting, where she would, like,
yes,
fart when they were in
scene.
Bed and
yes.
wake herself up or whatever. It was completely ad-libbed by Robin Williams. So if you remember that scene, Matt Damon is just losing it, like, crying and everything.
Yes. I was wondering if it was ad-libbed because of the way he was acting.
Yeah. And they even say that if you watch carefully, the camera's even shaking a little bit because the cameraman is probably laughing, too.
That's awesome.
So in 2014, after Robin Williams died, the bench in the Boston Public Garden, where he and Matt Damon had their conversation, out by the pond, became an impromptu memorial site where people left flowers, quotes, and various items at that bench in Boston. And they're actually having a petition that's been passed around to erect a statue in Williams' memory near the bench.
Maybe that's our through line. Both our movies had significant benches.
Oh, nice. Benches.
Benches.
We
my
did it.
My bench, my Forrest Gump's bench was
we'll
taken
just be
to
like,
a museum.
For our post for the episode, we're like, two of the top bench movies of the 1990s.
Yes.
When Matt Damon was in his fifth year at Harvard in real life, he was in playwriting class. The culmination of it was to write a one-act play. And he just started writing a movie, which, with the help of Ben Affleck, became this movie. So it was basically his fifth year project. So Matt Damon and Ben Affleck found a clever way to choose the right studio for their script. So the story goes that on page 60 of the script, they wrote a completely out of nowhere sex scene between Will and Chucky. I don't remember the exact character names, but basically two dudes like in the thing for no reason, just out of nowhere. And
oh
so they
my.
Would take it to all these major studios, and it was finally Harvey Weinstein at Miramax. He's like, I only really have one big note about the script. At page 60, the two leads, both straight men, have a sex scene. What the hell is that about? And apparently they said that they did it because they wanted to know that they actually read the script. So it's actually
clever.
Pretty clever. Let's see. And internet view between Matt Damon and Kevin Smith at IMDb's 2016 San Diego Comic-Con. Matt Damon mentioned that Kevin was instrumental in the movie being made, as it was Kevin that brought the script directly to Harvey Weinstein when the other studios were not showing any interest. So thanks, Kevin Smith, for hooking him up, too.
Not so much thanks, Harvey Weinstein, but...
Yeah. So more so, yeah. Kevin
Oops.
Smith, yes.
Yeah.
Good Will Hunting.
Very good. Man, I wish... Oh, I'm going to finish up the movie.
Very
I've still
good
got
Will
it open.
Hunting.
Very good Will Hunting. Very good. I'll have to finish that up because I want to see the ending sequence because
nice.
I'm right there with the construction scene. That's what happens. We don't get to do shit when you have kids. They're just constantly making your afternoon crazy. But yeah, and you'll finish. I'll finish it up tonight.
Kids
after
be like
show.
That, though.
Kids do be like that, you know. So thank you, Andy, for covering Good Will Hunting and spoiling it for me. I really appreciate that. That was delightful. I'm going to take you guys out. Real quick, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at 90s Court, on Instagram at 90s.court. Mm-hmm. You can vote on all of those platforms. The show comes out Monday morning, as you know, and you can vote on the Instagram in the story section, and then on Facebook and Twitter on the polls there. You only have one, you have 24 hours on Instagram stories. That's it. And the
is
other
that
times,
a threat?
It is. Otherwise, so help you God.
It feels like a real big threat. Just like,
it is.
You got 24 hours. Fucking don't waste
it. That's true. You can also support us on Patreon, patreon.com/90sCourt. We also have a merch store. Don't forget that. tpublic.com/user/the90sCourt. Mm-hmm. Still the same old stuff, but if you haven't gotten any yet, now's the time. It'll feel good. Treat yourself for the summer. And if you have a moment, we would love some fresh reviews on iTunes or Podchaser, or even and Podchaser if you wanted to, on both. Why not? 5 stars, best stars. That would make us feel all the stars. Love that.
If they have 6 stars, give us 6 stars.
Yeah, or a 5 feels good too. But
5
six
feels good, but
best.
I mean, like, if they have 6, that'd be weird to leave 5. But I mean, yeah, in case they, if they have 6, just in case.
For sure. Oh, it's part of
my
addendum.
Gotta add that addendum. Anyways.
Gotta add that addendum. That is our show. Do you have any parting remarks, Mr. Claude Felter? The amount of times I had to play that in middle school band.
Stay rad.
Good. I love it. Good night, everyone. Or good morning. Whatever. Wherever you are.
Love you.
Bye.
Bye.